Lycus rode in the assault carrier, feeling the tracks rumble over the ground, watching the dead land pass through a visual feed link to his helm. The tombstone silhouettes of buildings rose from the yellow murk and sank back out of sight to either side of the highway. They were moving down the main arterial route that crossed the northern districts of the Crescent City on an elevated spit of rockcrete and plasteel. Vehicles dotted the slim, slicked surface of the highway, but they were few. There had been no time for panic when the virus bombs fell, no time for people to jam the roads as they fled. There were a few places where vehicles blocked their path, but the four tanks simply rode over them without stopping. A las-cannon-mounted annihilator rode in the head of the squadron. Behind it came the carrier holding Lycus and a section of troops. Third in line was the flak tank, its sensor dishes rotating and its cannon and missile mount twitching like the head of a hunting dog. Last was a vanquisher, its long barrel swept behind it as it pushed through the fog. All of them were making best speed, engines roaring at the edge of tolerance as they plunged towards the heart of the city. They were exposed, but Lycus was hoping that the enemy did not know which direction they were coming from, and so would try and reach the sensorium shelter before them, rather than attempt to intercept. So far, that hope had been rewarded. Lycus blinked away the picked image from one eyepiece. 18 humans filled the compartment around him. Each of them wore bulky sealed armor coated in vulcanized rubber. Domed helmets enclosed their heads and locked into brass collar rings. Most of them carried short-barreled vulkite culverins, but two rested melter guns on their knees. They were all breathing air from tanks on their backs, and their armor was designed to let them fight in the vacuum of space. On the surface of Talan, it might buy them a few minutes of life. Lycus wondered how long his own power armor would last against the corrosive air. Any breaches and the virus would get in. Even he could not survive that.
"Marshal,"
said a voice of the lead tank commander. Her voice clipped and efficient over the vox.
"We are about to exit the highway."
"Confirmed, Machine One," he replied, and then blinked his vox over to squadron broadcast. Luminous digits counted down at the edge of his sight. "All units, objective is 10 minutes at current speed. Stand by for course change." The missile struck the lead tank and ripped it in two. Fire and smoke punched upwards from the detonation. The wreckage tumbled on down the highway, shedding tracks. The carrier slewed to the side. The vox exploded with voices. "Evasive action! Jamming our all specs! Where did that... Try to get a lock! I read 3 aerial targets descending fast!" Lycus blinked back to the image from outside of the carrier. Orange flame and black smoke coiled through the fog. The wreckage of the lead tank was closing to their front. Explosions flashed in its carcass as munitions detonated in the blaze. Beyond it, he could see the ramp sliding off the highway down into the fog.
"Ram through it!"
shouted Lycus. The troop carrier's driver did not hesitate. Power shuddered through the frame as the engines roared. The front of the machine hit the burning wreckage with a shriek of metal. The carrier bucked, momentum and power shoving it forwards as the bones of the burning tank raked down its side.
"Incoming!"
The shout from the flak tank reached Lycus's ears the instant before a second missile struck the wreckage behind them. A fresh explosion lifted the back of the carrier off the ground. Lycus felt an instant of weightlessness, and then the machine struck the road. Force hammered through him. He heard muffled cries as the human soldiers slammed into the compartment walls.
"All units, full speed!"
he called in the vox.
"Keep moving! Machine 3, target status! I have 3 air units active,"
said the voice of the flak tank commander.
2 possible Thunderhawk transports dropping to surface in area of objective. Probable materiel deployment. 3rd is smaller, class uncertain, likely gunship. They are wrapped in sensor baffles."
Lycus felt himself bare his teeth.
"Burn the enemy from the sky," he said. "I have a partial lock, engaging with cannons."
The fog flashed, and the rolling drum beat of the flak tank's heavy guns rose to meet the growl of the engines.
"They are evading. Transports have touched down on the surface. I have missile lock on the gunship."
There was a pause that reminded Lycus of a marksman's inhalation before a shot. Then a streak of fire leapt into the fog-shrouded sky.
"Missile loose!
Time to objective 6 minutes," called Lycus.
The transport lurched beneath him as it gathered speed down the ramp. Fire flashed high above them, strobing, then sinking through the murk in burning yellow streaks.
"Kill shot!" said the voice from the flak tank. "Take the transports as they lift," said Lycus. "All units, all specs to maximum. Enemy units active on objective."
"What was that?"
asked Sabir, looking up towards the ceiling of the shelter. No one answered. Gat's hands froze in the midst of checking the Vox's encryption settings. Another rumble trembled through the walls. Dust fell. Gulok felt an electric shiver circle his stomach. It was an old but familiar feeling. He had felt it when the bombardment had started, and before then, in the years he had lost to the Great Crusade.
"Start broadcasting,"
he said to Gat without moving his eyes from the ceiling. "Make a connection and find out how close the rescue force is." Gat nodded, but Gulok was already moving to the door. His skin was buzzing, his mouth dry, the taste of metal on his tongue and teeth.
"Where are you going?"
asked Sabir.
"To the airlock,"
said Gulok.
"What? Why?"
asked Sabir, voice snapping with tension. Gulok did not answer or pause. He was already moving down the passage, dropping down the plasteel stairs to the level below, eyes fixed on his path. A cluster of survivors flattened themselves against the wall as he went past. Some of them shouted after him, but he did not slow down. He paused as he passed a hatch door covered in yellow hazard stripes. He shoved it open. Racks of shotguns and lasguns lined the walls, gleaming black. He pulled a shotgun down, scooped up a box of solid shells, and kept moving, shoving rounds into the breach. An unpleasant thought was emerging in his mind. He had not been so relieved to make contact with other survivors that he had not thought whether anyone else had heard their signals. Part of him had assumed that whoever had murdered Talarn was long gone, that they had left the corpse of a world to its fate. He had not seen any sign of anyone on the surface. When the other shelter had said to use encryption keys for the Vox, he had barely registered the information. Now that fact screamed to him in time with the sound of his running feet. He reached the inner hatch of the decontamination lock. The entrance chamber was empty. None of the other survivors liked going near the exit. The bulk of the carrier he had used to go to the surface sat on the rockcrete. Decontamination fluid, rad scouring, and the toxic fog had reduced the surface of its hull to a mottled and pitted grey. The inner door loomed above him, a huge circular plate of plasteel over twice his height in diameter. Pistons gripped its edges, and pipes snaked from socks in its surface. A small porthole sat at its centre, set with glass as thick as the door itself. Kulok moved up to the glass and looked through. He did not know what he expected to see. He was not entirely sure what he was doing, just that he suddenly felt the need to stand here, on the border between the life below and the hell above. Gloom filled the decontamination chamber on the other side of the porthole. Another porthole sat in the outer door directly opposite the one in the inner door. It was smaller, barely a hand span across. Sickly yellow light trickled through that narrow gap. Kulok watched it, his hands clammy on the grip of the shotgun. The fog folded and lapped over the view. Something moved beyond the outer door. He squinted, breath held in his lungs. Was this them? Was this salvation? But then why had they not had Vox contact yet? The shape grew in the outer porthole, casting its shadow through the murk. The sound of running feet and gasping made him turn from the view. Sabir stumbled into the entrance chamber. Kulok took a step towards the older man, but Sabir pushed him away. The Prefectus's face was red, his mouth wide as he sucked air and fought to speak.
"A signal!"
Sabir gasped.
"A signal came through!"
Gulok glanced back through the portholes. The angle was wrong, but he thought he saw the light in the airlock chamber dim, as though something was blotting out the light from the outer porthole.
"It's them! The evacuation force!"
Gulok stepped closer to the huge door. He glanced at the airlock controls set into the wall beside the door.
"They say,"
Sabir coughed, his body quivering as he gulped air.
"There is..."
Gulok hesitated, the weight of the gun in his hands suddenly seeming foolish. He stepped towards the control panel.
"There is an enemy, and they..."
Gulok froze. Beyond the portal, something blotted out the light coming from the door.
"Coming!"
Sabir trembled and slid onto his knees. Gulak took a pace towards the inner door. He was bringing his head to look through the porthole when something hit the outer door with a sound like the shattering of mountains. The Lascannon beams reached through the building in front of Lycus's carrier and tore it apart. Plaster and rock exploded with heat. Plasteel girders folded like reeds as the building twisted under its own weight. The carrier lurched to one side. Rubble and dust cascaded down into the road. The hull of the war machine rang with impacts. Dust drowned Lycus's visual feed, and he blink-switched it to the carrier's Auspex. Waves of distortion blurred the display. Flashes of weapon detonations splashed amongst the static. The hull shapes of the Iron Warrior's machines stood out like blade edges reflecting moonlight at night. Lycus's squadron was rolling down a wide street. The shelter lay half a kilometre to their right. Rows of squat hab blocks ran along the road on both sides. The machine that had fired at them was running parallel to them, behind that screen of buildings. It was a Predator, one of a pair that the Iron Warrior's transports had set down in the city before lifting off. Its twin was running with it, snapping out shots with its turret cannon and sponson guns. One road over again, the bloated bulk of an Iron Warrior's land raider had vanished in the direction of the Sensorium shelter. From a purely kill tactic point of view, this was not a good position for the Iron Warriors. They had dropped three tanks, two light machines and a heavy troop carrier. The land raider had moved directly towards the shelter, leaving its two lighter kin to face Lycus's squadron. The two Predators were fast killers in open terrain, or with surprise or numbers on their side. In the graveyard of the Crescent City, they had neither of those advantages. Lycus still had three war machines. Even the carrier he rode in carried twin lascannons, and enough armor to weather anything but a direct hit. Riding close behind the carrier was the flak tank. Its cannons were not designed to engage ground targets, but they fired high-explosive shells at a rate that made design and accuracy irrelevant. Then there was the Vanquisher. It was an apex killer of its kind. Given time, the Iron Warrior tanks would die. But Lycus did not have time. The Iron Warriors lay between Lycus and the shelter. They only had to buy enough time for the Land Raider and its cargo to do their work. It was a game that Lycus had already played out in his mind, and seen that he would lose. This was not something he could accept. "Machine three," he said across the vox. "Static position. Fire sweep angles 4-5 through 103 immediate. Confirm," said the flak tank commander. "Machine four," snapped Lycus. "Advance on current heading, fire free." He held the connection long enough to hear the Vanquisher's confirmation, and then switched to the carrier's internal vox. "On my command, turn hard right, maximum speed." A second later, he heard the rolling roar as the flak tank opened up with its cannons. Halted in the middle of the road, its stabilizers extended. It was panning its cannons through a slow arc, punching shells through the skins of buildings into the road beyond. Lycus saw the splash of detonations as three shells hit one of the enemy Predators. "Turn now," he called. The human driver yanked the carrier to the right. The machine's engine screamed as power surged into the tracks. Its nose hit the wall of the building just behind the flak tank's fire. It punched through, rockcrete dust exploding around it, ramming through internal walls, stone slabs exploding under its tracks. Above it, the building began to fall, floor by floor, dust and fragments spinning through the air. Lycus's armor tensed as the shockwaves rang through the machine. The troopers shook like puppets with their strings cut. Then the carrier hit the other wall and ripped through onto the road. Behind it, the building cascaded to the ground. A wave of dust rolled out, clotting the fog, rattling shards onto the road's surface. Lycus blinked his visual feed link to the carrier's infrasight. The world outside the tank became a painting in red and yellow on blue. They were between the two Iron Warrior's Predators. Both machines glowed bright with engine heat. The turret of the nearest machine twisted towards the carrier, lascannons flashing white. The Vanquisher shell hit the side of the Predator's turret and ripped it out of its collar. Smoke spilled out, bubbling with white heat. The second Predator was accelerating and turning, its turret tracking around to the carrier. The Iron Warriors inside would know that they could not survive this engagement, but they also knew that their sole task was to allow the Land Raider to reach the shelter. They would see that task done. The barrel of the Predator's cannon turned towards the carrier. A shell hit the road beside its track. The Predator rocked as its gun fired again. The shell hit the carrier's flank and ricocheted off. The sound smacked through Lycus. A sharp ringing filled his skull. The troopers in the compartment shouted in shock and pain. An opening between two buildings appeared before them. The carrier's engine roared as it plunged into the alley. Smoke from burning oil filled the compartment. Heavy rounds struck the blockwork behind them. Lycus blinked back to the Auspex view. They were 300 meters from the shelter, but the bright heat bloom of the Land Raider was already there. Above them, the tiers and domes of the sensorium shadowed the fog, intact windows winking with the reflected light of explosions.
Marshal, came the voice of the flak tank commander. Multiple aerial units dropping from orbit. Estimate 3 lifters and 4 escort gunships. Engage at will, said Lycus. Locking target and preparing to fire.
The Vox stayed open long enough for Lycus to hear the first missile kicking free of the launcher. It would not be enough. They would take one of the Iron Warrior's craft, 2 possibly, but the rest would reach the surface. Kulok staggered backwards. The outer airlock door shook in its setting. He came to his feet. He could see something beyond the portholes, a looming slab shape moving in the gloom. The thunder roll of impact came again, and then a scream of torn metal. Kulok was at the lock controls before he was fully aware of what he was doing.
What?
Yelped Sabir.
What are you doing?
Kulok triggered the inner door release. Seals disengaged with a thump. Pistons began to pull the circular door upwards.
You will kill us all!
Shouted Sabir. Kulok ducked under the opening door and looked back at the Prefectus.
Lock the inner door, he said.
Sabir did not move.
Now!
Sabir pulled himself up and scrambled for the lock controls. The inner door reversed its opening and began to press closed. Kulok turned to face the outer door. The lock was small, just wide enough to take a single vehicle or a clutch of people. Nozzle and focusing arrays dotted the oiled metal of the walls. Kulok was breathing hard, trying to focus some calm into his pulse as the door sealed shut behind him. He did not know what he was doing. He was one man, unarmored and barely armed. The moment the outer door was breached, he would have seconds to live before Talan's heir took him. He might have a moment to pull the trigger on his gun once, maybe twice. He would take those 2 seconds and those shots. It was his mistake. He'd insisted on going to the surface, on throwing a signal out onto the wind for someone, anyone to hear. Perhaps they would all have died in the shelter in a few weeks. Perhaps, as clear as it had seemed then, it was less so now. All that was certain was that everyone in the shelter, all the little clutches of shivering scribes and administrators, all of them would now die, and die because of him. One shot could not prevent that. No act so small could stop whatever death pounded on the door. But that did not matter. The deed alone mattered. Metal thunder shook the air inside the lock as another blow struck the metal. The sound blurred into the shriek of tearing metal. Kulok was breathing hard, heart hammering. He stepped closer to the tiny porthole and looked. Figures stood in the yellow gloom at the bottom of the entrance ramp. Figures that could have been men, but men were not sculpted from iron. They were huge, taller than anything should be that had such a shape. Their shoulders were hunched curves of dull metal. Curtains of chain hung from them, swaying as they drew back lightning-wreathed fists to strike the door. Red light shone from the slots that were their eyes. Kulok knew what he was looking at, but the shock still caught the breath in his lungs. They were space marines. They were Terminators. A Land Raider sat on the ramp above them, its weapon pods twitching. As Kulok watched, one of the Terminators turned, head rotating in its socket. The red slot of its eyes met Kulok's gaze. Its left fist ended in a pair of chain blades. The teeth blurred as they spun. Kulok froze, the gun in his hand hanging heavy. The Terminator raised its fist. A flash of light split the gloom at the top of the ramp. The Land Raider rocked in place. Lightning whipped from the muzzles of its las cannons. Kulok blinked. Then there was a flash, and molten orange billowed into the fog as the Land Raider exploded. Flames rushed down the ramp. Pieces of armor struck the door as the blast wave hit.
The Terminators were moving, gun arms rising as fire swallowed them. Machine kill! Called the Vanquisher commander over the Vox. Lycus nodded. The kill had been good, exceptionally good, in fact. The carrier's las cannons and the Vanquisher shell had struck the Land Raider in quick succession. The first had weakened the Land Raider's frontal armor. The second had torn the tank apart. Take us in, said Lycus. Do we still have a Vox link to the shelter? Signal has failed, Marshal, called the carrier commander. But we won't reach the entrance anyway, sir. The wreckage is blocking the top of the ramp. Lycus blinked the Auspex feed from his sight. The masked faces of the human soldiers looked back at him. They had heard the carrier commander's words, and all of them would know what it meant. All troops prepare to deploy, said Lycus. We clear the area in front of the entrance. When that is clear, we proceed through the shelter entrance and decontaminate. There were no salutes, no gestures of dissent or protest. The soldiers simply did what their training had soaked into their flesh and blood. Weapon catches released. Hands checked grenades hanging from harnesses, tapped breathing tubes. Lycus watched them, struck for a moment by their discipline. They all knew what they were stepping into, what world of murder waited outside the carrier's hull. They knew, but still they did not hesitate or question. We need to reach the astropath, and we need time. He pulled the plasma pistol from his thigh. It began to buzz, charge building in its coils. He thought of the days and steps that had brought him to this, the days of war and conquest, the victories won, and the dead looking back at him from the path of memory. He thought of Fal, of the blood of his brothers scattering into the void, and the silent roar of flame as warships drowned in the fires of death. The carrier lurched as it turned hard, engine gunning. The human soldiers shook. He felt his mouth open, words forming on his lips and then growling from his speaker grill. You are warriors of the Emperor, he said. War is choice. The choice to stand, the choice to fight, the choice to keep your oaths. You have chosen to be here, to stand here, to hold to the oaths we made to the future of mankind. And I would choose no others to stand with. The Vox roared with the soldier's reply. The carrier slammed to a halt. Assault ramps hinged open. Fog-thickened air poured in. Lycus's armor began to scream warnings, toxic, corrosive, viral. The soldiers charged through the fog. It began to eat at the soldiers, layers of vulcanized rubber peeling from their armor. The first one fell after two paces and hit the ground like a bag of fluid. The rest ran on. The wreck of the Land Raider was pouring fire and smoke towards the hidden sky. Bolt rounds roared out of the fog. Three soldiers fell at the same moment. Targeting and threat markers spun in Lycus's helmet display as he ran. The heat of the burning wreck sent ripples of static through his sight. Another human went down, jerking as he hit the ground, holes eaten in his air feeds. The fog shrouded the corpse as Lycus passed. He was at the front of the remaining soldiers, the slope of the ramp beneath his feet. A bolt round exploded against his shoulder. He stumbled, caught himself, brought his plasma pistol up and fired down the ramp. The shot was almost blind, but that did not matter. What did matter was pouring everything they could into the space that the bolt rounds were coming from. Grenades! He shouted, the sound booming flat in the fog. Two frag grenades were in his hand. He heard another of the soldiers gasp and fall, flesh turning to sludge in failed armor. He threw the grenades and pulled his power sword from its scabbard. Explosions blossomed as he charged down the ramp. Kulok watched the world become fire. In the seconds after the explosion, the world beyond the porthole had become distant, as though he was watching a recording on a vidscreen. It was oddly quiet. The roar of explosives and gunfire locked behind the layers of plasteel. Every now and again the door shook, and the rumble of the explosions outside became metallic thunder, rolling through the still air within. Figures moved through the flame, blurred by speed and smoke. He saw the Terminators bracing, the flames washing them with soot. There were humans out there too, soldiers in bloated void armor, firing beams through the smoke and flame. It was impossible, but there they were, standing on the surface of Talarn, fighting, advancing as the air dissolved their armor. A melter beam flicked out, struck a Terminator and punched through armor and flesh. The Terminator reeled, struck the door, and the impact rang in Kulok's ears.
Another figure came down the ramp. It was another space marine, but in yellow armor. The sword in his hand spat sparks into the fog. The Terminators braced and fired as one. Bolters hammered into the charging warrior. Splinters of yellow lacquer and ceramite scattered from the lone space marine. He did not stop. Another melter blast struck one of the Terminators. Energy beams struck its squadmates like rain. The yellow warrior was within blade range. A Terminator with a chain fist met the charge. Sword and spinning teeth kissed. Sparks and lightning lit the smoke-shadowed air. Vast strengths strained against each other as the weapons locked. The Terminator shrugged, the movement rippling with strength. The sword sheared free of its chain fist. The yellow warrior backhanded his sword into the side of the Terminator's leg. It was not a deep cut, barely enough to splinter the shin plate, but it was enough to crack the thinner armor at the back of the knee. The Terminator brought his fist up, froze, and began to fall as the air of Talon found the flesh within the skin of iron. The warrior in yellow was firing before the Terminator struck the floor. Blasts of plasma spat from his pistol. Sheets of Volkite energy were coming down the ramp from a line of advancing human soldiers. A Terminator ran at them. It was fast, shockingly fast for something so big. Beams shattered on its armor like drops of rain on hot steel. It struck one of the soldiers, and the human burst apart. The rest fired at it. They were so close that the muzzles of their guns were almost touching their target. The Terminator was burning, but did not fall. It swung its fist wide. Bodies fell, broken, blood congealing to black as it met the air. The warrior in yellow aimed and fired. The burst of plasma bolts struck the Terminator in the back. Metal blistered and flashed to gas, and the Terminator was falling, fists swinging like a toy automaton. The yellow-armored warrior turned, aim sweeping to the last Terminator before the door. But that last enemy was too fast. Bolt rounds hammered into the warrior's legs, and now he was falling, and the Terminator was coming forwards, and the rain of Volkite and Melter fire was slackening. Kulok heard himself shout. The sound rang through the lock. It was a cry of terror and pleading for the universe to stop, for the scene playing out before his eyes to prove false. He watched the Terminator raise its fist above the fallen warrior in yellow. On the ramp above it, the figure of a lone human soldier swayed, gun firing even as it fell from its hand. The beam struck the Terminator. It hesitated for a second as though stung, and then punched down. The blow never landed. The yellow-armored warrior rolled aside and stabbed upwards. The power sword punched through the Terminator's eye slot and into the face beneath. The helm exploded with a whip-crack of white light. The warrior stood, slowly, armor grey and smoking. Behind him, fire rolled in the fog. He turned to look at the door. Kulok met the blank green gaze of the helm. Radiation and liquid poured over Lycus. The rad scrubbers and fluid vents spun around him again, drenching him, stripping virus and matter from his armor. None of the human soldiers had made it to the door. He alone stood and waited for the decontamination to finish and the inner door to open. The rings set into the walls spun one last time, then froze. Fluid dripped from the nozzles and steam rose from his armor. It was heavily damaged. He estimated that he had had another 20 seconds before a joint seal would have corroded and failed. Warnings pulsed at the side of his sight, and the servos in his legs clattered and whined as he stepped up to the inner door. A broad-faced man was watching him from the other side of a glass porthole. The man had thin, feather-lined scars down his cheek, and the look of strength softened at the edges. His eyes were steady, though, a fighter's eyes. The inner door hissed open. Lycus stepped across, pulling his helm free and breathing in the smell of the shelter. Rockcrete, hot wiring, and poorly filtered air. The man with the eyes of a soldier looked at him. He had a shotgun in his hand, a finger on the trigger guard, but the barrel carefully pointed at the floor. Another man in the clothes of a prefectus in the local administration stood against the wall, eyes wide, face pale.
"I am Lycus," he said.
"You have come for us?" asked the man with the shotgun, not moving.
"You heard us.
You have come for us.
Where is the astropath?" asked Lycus.
How are we getting out? Are there more of you coming?
Lycus took a half step forward.
What is your name?
He asked the man with the shotgun.
I am Gulok.
Lycus nodded. Where is the astropath, Gulok? There is not much time. I need to go to him now. Gulok did not reply, and Lycus thought he saw something flicker in the human's gaze. Then the man nodded and turned.
Follow me, Lord,
he said. They hurried through the tunnels of the shelter. Lycus saw faces inside tunnels, eyes staring at him as he followed Gulok. The shelter was not large, but it was almost deserted. He could smell the build-up of pollutants and carbon dioxide in the air. A few more days, and everybody in the shelter would suffocate. His vox hissed snatches of information at him from the commander of the Vanquisher on the surface. The carrier was gone. Its internal seals had failed after Lycus had disembarked. A saturation rocket strike had taken out the flak tank 2 minutes ago. Only the Vanquisher remained. The enemy dropships were on the ground. Multiple armored units were converging on the shelter.
Here,
said Gulok, as they reached a heavy door. The room beyond was small. Racks of parchment hid the walls. The last astropath on Talarn lay in a tangle of blankets, blind sockets fixed on the ceiling above, mouth forming silent words. Lycus became still, his hurried movements fading to stillness.
He has been like this for the last few hours, said Gulok. Before that, he was comatose.
The human paused.
I have no idea what he is saying when he speaks.
Lycus nodded without breaking his gaze on the astropath. He knelt down beside the withered figure. Static and snatches of words cracked from the vox set in his collar. He ignored them.
What is his name?
He asked.
Helikaim, apparently, but...
Lycus raised his hand and Gulok went quiet.
Astropath Helikaim, said Lycus.
The astropath's lips kept moving, but there was no sign that he had heard his name.
Astropath, I am Marshal Lycus of the 7th Legion Astartes. Can you hear me?
The astropath did not move. Lycus opened his mouth to speak again.
Wait,
said Gulok, and moved around Lycus. Slowly, as though he was reaching to pick up a sleeping snake, Gulok reached out and took one of the astropath's withered hands.
We are here, said Gulok. They have come for us, for you. Can you hear us?
Lycus watched the astropath's face. The veins running across the scalp were blue threads in translucent white. Gulok looked at Lycus. The astropath's hand spasmed shut around Kulok's. His body snapped, rigid. Lycus heard joints pop.
Dust! Dry dust! Dry! No water! Only dust and darkness!
The astropath shouted, his voice high and shrill.
Darkness below! Darkness at the root of the world and the eye beyond! The eye within sees and seeks and knows! Helikaim!
Lycus roared the name, and it thundered around the small room. Gulok jerked back as though he had been struck. The astropath twitched, shivered, and the words babbling from his lips drained away.
My name, said the astropath. Where? What is...
Astropath Helikaim, said Lycus again, his voice low. I am Marshal Lycus of the 7th Legion Astartes. I need you to listen to me. The astropath shivered and went still. The pits of his eyes fixed on Lycus, and the space marine had the sensation that the man was looking through him.
I hear you, son of stone,
said Helikaim, and his voice was steady.
Do you know where you are?
Talarn. Or at least that was where I was.
You are still on Talarn, said Lycus. The world is dead, and you are the last of your kind here.
Dust,
said the old man.
I saw dust blowing in the wind.
Those loyal to the Imperium need to know what has happened here. They need to know that the Iron Warriors are here. Behind him, Lycus heard Kulok's breath leave his lungs. Helikaim shivered.
I,
he began.
The wind, the night.
It will take whatever it takes. Word must reach them. Lycus watched as the astropath bowed his head.
I,
began the astropath.
To project a message form requires preparation. I do not have a meaning source.
Lycus released the armor seal on his right wrist and pulled his gauntlet free. The astropath's hand was cold as Lycus gripped it. An electric tingle passed up his nerves.
Take what you need to understand, said Lycus.
Hallekeim shivered. The lips pulled back from his teeth. Fire burned through Lycus. Smoke and mist breathed from the astropath's mouth. Pain yanked Lycus's thoughts. Frost grew on their clasped hands. Their thoughts blurred, mixed, flowed like burning oil and freezing water. He was a boy, watching the thoughts of those around him dance in halos. He was a warrior, standing on the walls of Cthulhon, the shells of his autocannon pouring into the beasts below. He was a robed neophyte, kneeling as his eyes boiled away under the gaze of a being that was less than a god, more than a man. He was standing on the deck of the Light of Inwit as the Iron Warrior's boarding pods bit through the hull. He was holding Hallekeim's hand, his flesh crawling with heat.
I have enough, said the astropath. I will send the message.
Lycus nodded and stood. A low rumble growled through the air and the ceiling shook. I will give you what time I can, said Lycus, and turned to leave the room.
This was it, wasn't it?
Said Kulok from behind him. Lycus did not stop moving. His hand pulled his plasma pistol free and he checked the charge coils.
There is not going to be an evacuation, is there? You came here because of the astropath, and only because of him. We are not going to survive.
Lycus paused and looked back at the man.
Word must get out.
Talon's fate must be heard, he said. You have served the Emperor well. You will be remembered. Kulok held Lycus's gaze and then shook his head.
No,
he said, and walked past Lycus.
No, I won't. But I will stand with you.
Kulok pulled the enviro suit on. It was clammy against his skin. The breath feed snapped into place, and cool air flowed across his face. He checked the harnesses holding the oxygen bottle across his back and picked the shotgun up. 12 solid rounds. He doubted he would be able to reload wearing the suit's heavy gloves. He snorted to himself. Once Talon's killing air was inside the shelter, he doubted he would have time to reach the end of the shotgun's clip.
What is happening?
Said Sabir. Kulok had not heard the Prefectus enter the armory.
What are you doing?
Kulok turned and shouldered past Sabir.
What is...
Kulok looked at him, and the man stepped back, blinking. There were tears on the Prefectus's cheeks. He held the older man's glistening stare, and then turned and began to run. He reached the airlock to find Lycus standing before it. His sword was drawn, his pistol in his hand. There was a boom, and light flashed through the porthole. Dust fell like fine snow from the roof.
Shaped crack charges,
said Lycus, his voice growling flat from his helm grill.
They are cutting and blasting sequentially, creating fault lines in the door. They will be through the first door soon.
As though in answer to those words, the inner airlock door rang like a gong. Kulok swallowed, his throat dry. He saw a shape moving on the other side of the inner porthole, a slab, armored face looking in. A blinding beam of light flared across the porthole. Molten crystal began to weep down the circle of crystal as the beam bored deeper. The door shook.
Will this...
began Kulok, and found his voice catching in his lips.
Will this make a difference?
Lycus looked at him, green lenses bright in the bare ceramite of his helm. Yes, he said after a moment. Every act of defiance matters.
To the Imperium.
To existence. Kulok looked back at the door. The porthole was a circle of molten orange. Three other points to either side of the center were glowing cherry red as the cutters bit deeper. Another metal roar shook the quiet.
What were you?
Asked Lycus. Kulok looked up at Lycus with surprise. The space marine tilted his head to the side.
Before this, what were you?
Kulok shrugged.
An evader of taxes.
A low growl came from Lycus, getting louder as the warrior's armor shook. After a second, Kulok realized that the space marine was laughing. Lycus brought his plasma pistol up to aim at where the airlock door was starting to blister yellow. Kulok raised his shotgun, braced, finger tense on the trigger. The airlock door blew in. White-hot shards of metal and crystal flew inwards in a wash of smoke and tainted air. Kulok fired 5 rounds before Talan pulled his flesh from his bones and sent his memory out into the realm of the dead.
They heard.
Across the star-dotted vaults of space, astropaths woke from their trances with images of iron giants striding through dead cities and silence. Shivering, they unraveled the sensations of their dreams and the allegorical meanings shouted in their minds with the fury of a last dying scream. "Come to us," it said. "The iron warriors are here. Talan is dead. Its grave will be the anvil upon which you break them." They heard. On the bridge of the Lament of Caliban, they heard. In the Conclave of Iron, the princeps of the Legio Griffonicus and the Myrmidon lords of Zelth heard. Amidst the silence of the Neren Gulf, the ships of Niobe, the Castigator, heard. Alone in the tower of his war bark, Tempest Law, general of 70,000 swords, heard. And in 100 more quiet places, 1,000 more, the loyal warriors of the Emperor heard. And, one by one, they rose to answer the siren call of war. That was Siren by John French, read by Jonathan Keeble.